So I'm holding on Kuf Mem on the base, first line, the wide lines. Mishnah said, Kore Zachar, a male Kore, we said a Kore is a partridge, which is a type of bird where they often nest on, they often brood on, whatever, eggs of other species of birds. And in this case, in this particular case, we're talking about a male. Rabbi Eliezer Machayev, a Chum Poacher, Rabbi Eliezer says, Yechayev and Shalom Hakan, if you want to take the eggs, and the Chum say you're not.
Why is that?
That's what we have to figure out. Omer Rabbi Bahu, my time is at Rabbi Eliezer. Why would Rabbi Eliezer say that you have to send away, that you have to do Shalom Hakan with a Kore? And we'll see. And we'll see in the next bit, in the next discussion of the Gemara, are we talking about Dafka, a male one, or are we talking about a female one? We'll talk about that. But first, why does Rabbi Eliezer say that you chayev with a kore in the first place if the eggs don't belong to it?
Why we started the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer?
Because Rabbi Eliezer is mentioned in the Mishnah first. That's usually how it is in the Mishnah. When you have machlokas, you usually have the individual opinion and then the chacham. Yes. So Rabbi Eliezer machayev chacham partner. I'm Rabbi Bo. My time in Rabbi Eliezer. Ask your degira, because we look at, it's not really a true Zera Shavah, because they're both Pesukim and Nevi'im, but you have two Pesukim that mention the word degira. The Shurdish Dalet Gimel Resh, in modern Hebrew, they use it to mean brooding on the eggs. In the Pesukim, Rashi explains over there, in the Pesukim over there, Rashi explains, it means like calling to them, like when the mother bird calls to the chicks, and they follow, her. So you have one pasuk in Yirmiyah in connection with the Kore. That's a Kore jogger below Yolad. The Kore calls to its chicks, but it calls to the eggs, whatever. But it doesn't actually bear, in the sense that, in other words, since it's sitting on eggs of other species, so eventually once they hatch and it calls to them, they don't follow it because they're not its children. They instinctively realize this isn't their mother and they go off. Yeah. The nimshal of it is over there, like a person who gathers wealth unjustly, and then it eventually goes away from him. So there you see the word dogar is mentioned in connection with kore, uchtivos, and then you have a different pasuk, uvok of a pasuk in Yishaya, uvok of the dogar of a certain kind of bird, which the pasukim describe over there, various kinds of wild birds and animals that will live in the ruins of Edom. So it mentions a certain kind of bird over there. It actually says it's an owl, uvaka, that it'll hatch its eggs with dog rubatila, and it'll call its young in the shade. And in the shade of the ruined buildings or whatever. The point being that there you have the same word dogar, and there it's in feminine form, uvaka of a dog rubatila. So therefore we see from that nothing to do with masculine or feminine, but what it means is, in other words, that in the case of the pasuk in Yeshaya, we're talking about a bird that is hatching and calling to birds, to eggs and chicks of its own species. So the same way, in the first pasuk, therefore, it has to be the normal kind of jagira. So therefore, in other words, the normal kind of calling. So in other words, given that a kore normally sits on eggs of other species, then that's the normal thing for it. Therefore, in other words, so Rabbi Eliezer, why is Rabbi Eliezer saying that you're chayev in the case of a kore, even though the eggs belong to a different species, because the normal thing for a kore to be sitting on eggs of a different species. So we learn from the second pasuk, which mentions the mother bird hatching and then calling to its own chicks. Therefore, we learn from that, in any case where it's a normal thing, where it's a normal thing for the bird to sit on these eggs and then later on to hatch them and to call to them, then you'd be chayev. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says it applies to a kore.
So again, the meaning of the pasuk is
uvakar. Uvakar, it'll hatch its eggs with dog rabatila and it'll call to its young in the shade. So we see, in other words, that's the point. The point is, though, Rashi says, over there it definitely means its own kind. The same way over here. So when it comes to a kore, it can be called her aim because it's usual for it to sit on these kinds of aims. So Rabbi Eliezer would say that. And on the other hand, then further you have like this. Rabbi Eliezer would say, given that it's also normal for the male kore to sit on the birds, unlike on the eggs, unlike with most species where it's only the female, therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says, anything where it's the normal way of doing it, then you'd be chayev. So that's why he says you're chayev in a kurei, and that's why he says even within the kurei you're chayev with the male. This is how he learns halacha. Okay. Oh, come on. Okay. Omer of Elazar, machloikis bekurei zachar. So Rabbi Elazar says, this machloikis of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim is actually only about the male kurei. Ava bekurei nekeva, but when it comes to a female kurei, divrei hakochayim. Then, says Rabbi Elazar, everybody would agree, even the Chachamim would hold these chayim. So the question is, pshita, isn't that obvious? Kurei zachar tnan. The Mishnah had specifically mentioned a male kurei, implying that a female kurei, the Chachamim would agree with chayim, even though the eggs don't belong to it. The answer is not necessarily. You could argue that the Rabbanan are holding that even a female kore is potter. The reason why it mentions the males tell you how far Rabbi Eliezer goes in being Machayev, that not only here you have, there's two strikes against it, kind of. Because number one, the eggs don't belong to it, and number two, it's a male. And usually you're potter from Shiloh HaKan with a male because the Pasuk mentions her Emre, that's a right? And the mother is brooding on the young. And yet over here, Rabbi Eliezer says not only a korei, where the eggs don't belong to it, but it's even a korei zachar. So maybe then, you could argue therefore that that is why the Mishnah mentions a korei zachar. Maybe you would say, in fact, they're also arguing about a korei nekeva, and therefore, kamash malon, that is what Rabbi Eliezer wants to inform us that, no, the Chachamim would agree that a female korei you would be chayim. In other words, the Chachamim are only concerned, according to this version, the Chachamim are only concerned about the question, is it a male parent or not? If it's a male parent, you always potter, whether it's a kore or anything else. And if it's a female, then you always chayev whether these eggs belong to it.
Everybody would agree on the
female. Right. Yeah. Okay. Ve'amar Rabbalazar. Then Rabbalazar says another thing. Machloikas the kore zachar. The machloikas is when it comes to a male kore. Ava b'zachar da'alma. But when it comes to males of other species of birds, where it's not usual for them to nest on the eggs at all, divrei hakol potter, then everybody would agree you're potter. It's only by the kurei zachar that Rabbi Eliezer is saying yechayev because it is normal for it to sit on the eggs. And again, the question is pshita, kurei zachar tnan. Shouldn't that be obvious? The Mishnah mentioned specifically a kurei male, excluding all the others. And the answer is similarly, ma'u detemer Rabbi Eliezer after the zachar da alma machayev. Maybe Rabbi Eliezer would say that you're always chayev for any male bird. The reason why the Mishnah specifically mentions a male korei would be the other way around. The Rabbanon to tell you how far the Rabbanon go that even with a korei, where it's normal, where both the males and the females sit on the egg. Yeah, and you have, and again, you have one pasuk that mentions korei dogar in the masculine, and the other vokar of a dogar of a sila, which is the feminine. So Rabbi Eliezer says that it's interchangeable when it comes to a korei, but you could argue that maybe the Mishnah wants to tell us how far the Chachamim go, that even with a korei, if it's a male, then it's potter. But with other males, they might, you could argue, maybe they would also argue with him. Kamash Malon, that is why Rabbi Eliezer wants to inform us that no, the Chachamim do agree that with all other Sechorim it's potter. So in other words, taking these two statements together, what we wind up with is if it's a female of any other species, you're definitely chayev. Everybody agrees to that. If it's a female korei, also everybody would agree you're chayev. If it's a male or female of any other species, right? If it's a female korei, also everybody would agree you're chayev. That was Rabbi Lazar's first point. So all females are going to be chayev, korei or not. And then you would say, on the other hand, males of all other species are definitely potter. A male korei, that would be the machlokes. So in other words, the machlokes would specifically be about the male korei, not about the female korei, and not about the males or females of any other species. Tanya Nami Hofi, indeed, we learn like that in the Braisa, like the second statement, Zohar da'alma potter, males in general are potter from Shaloh HaKan, korei Zohar, Rabbi Eliezer Machayev, Acham potter. Now, the way we have it in our Gemara over here, it sounds like the two statements of Rabbi Elazar are not contradicting each other, they're complementing each other. On the other hand, the Rosh points out that, the problem with that is, the Rosh points out that the Rif only quotes the second statement of Rabbi Elazar. And the Rosh wonders, why is that? If we're trying to talk about if the second statement just clarifying what Rabbi Elazar holds, what's the difference? The halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar anyway. So the Rosh understand the Rosh says then that apparently the Rif must have had a slightly different girsa over here, not which you can see in Hagoyit Habach also, not the Amar Rabbi Elazar, not and Rabbi Elazar made a second statement, but rather Ika De'ami Amar Rabbi Elazar. There's another version of what Rabbi Elazar said, and therefore it would come out analyzing that way of looking at it, you would say that the halacha would be like a second version because you have a braisa to support it. And the result of that would be that the chachamim would be saying you potter any time the eggs don't belong to this mother. So that is how the Rif holds, and the Rambam holds like that or so. So that relates to the previous discussion that we had at the end of the Gemara yesterday about the Yonah versus Tassil. So if you have, what if it's a Yonah on a Yonah's on a Yonah's eggs? Would you be chayev or not? According to the Rif's and the Rambam's understanding, you'd be potter in that case also. You're potter in any case where them, even if they're the same species, where the mother doesn't, where these eggs don't belong to this mother.
That's not the halacha.
Well, that is one understanding of the halacha. So in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that that if the eggs belong to a different mother, because you have the Rif and the Rambam understand it that way. On the other hand, the Rosh disagrees with that whole premise. He learns the Gemara differently, similar to the way we have it. So it's not really, I don't know if it's Ashkenazim or Sfardim so much. What it says at Shulchan Aruch is you should send away the mother in that case. If it's granted in the case where the mother and the eggs are where these aren't the eggs of this mother, so you should send them, whether it's a koray or any other bird. So you should send the mother away. You should send the parent bird away, the mother away. But if you didn't, then you're not chayav malchus to suffer.
Sending it away would be
so that you'd be mekayev mitzvah saseh according to the opinions, for example, the girsis that I have over here, that Rabbi Lazar is making two complementary statements. Whereas if you say that he's making two statements that is two different versions of a statement, then the result is that the chachamim would be saying that you never have to send away the mother if these eggs don't belong to her, and Rabbi Eliezer would be saying that you do, and the halacha would be like the chachamim, of course. So that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, is that in such a case, whether it's a kore, whether it's any other bird, you should be sending away the mother, but if you didn't, you're not chayav malchus if the eggs don't actually belong to it.
To reconcile
both. That way you're fully right. Okay. Mishnah says, suppose that the mother is flying above the nest. She's not actually sitting on the nest. So it depends. Does man shekhnefer nogus bakan, if her wings are touching the nest, chayav l'shalayach, then he's still chayav to do shalayach hakan. Ain't knefer nogus bakan, but if its wings are not touching the nest, potter l'shalayach, then you potter from sending, because then you can't call it that it's not revesting. It's not resting or crouching on the nest. Okay. Ain't shem ela efroyach echad et beitza achas, if there's only one chick or one egg in the nest, chayav l'shalayach, he's still chayav in shalayach hakan. We learned a braita about this before, shenem a kan, because the pasuk mentioned that you find a nest implying kan mikol makom, whatever there's in the nest, as long as there's something in it, even if it's only one chick or one egg, then you're chayav.
Otherwise it didn't have to mention
the word kan at all. Ki kore tipper lefanecha efreichim ebeisim, and you would understand that we're talking about in a nest. I don't know. I'm not sure how it would have phrased it otherwise. But the point is, the word kan implies whatever you have in that kan, as long as it needs the mother. What if the chicks in the nest are already older and they're able to fly on their own?
It would have said mikan.
Maybe. I don't know what it would have said exactly. Like I said, maybe they didn't have to say the word kan at all. Ki yukore tzipor lefanecha baderech b'chalei tzalaret efreichem ebeisim. You understand, we're talking about you find a mother together with her chicks or her eggs, and where do you usually find them? In a nest. So that mentions nest, yes. Anyway, the point is, okay, so if you had chicks in there that are already fledgling, they're already able to fly on their own, so they don't need the mother so much, or you have in there eggs that are unfertilized, which are never going to develop chicks, also potter l'shalayach, you potter from shalayach hakan, shenema, because the pasuk says, the pasuk mentions that the mother is brooding on the chicks or on the eggs, implying that there's a hekesh between chicks and eggs. Just like chicks are things that are going to continue living on their own, we learned in the previous Gemara that if the chicks are trefa, then you're potter for a different reason. We said because tikach loch below the slavacha, but still, so the chicks are bnei kayama. They're able to continue living. They exist as chicks. Afbeitim bnei kayama. Therefore, the eggs also have to be something that will actually continue to exist. Yotsu muzoris. Therefore, that excludes unfertilized eggs because those are never going to develop into a chick. and vice versa. Uma basin tzrichan leiman, just like eggs are something that still need the mother because they need her to sit on them to hatch them. In the same way the chicks have to be ones that still need the mother, as opposed to ones that are fledgling. So that is how we know. So we know that we know that fledgling chicks are potter because they're not like eggs, they don't need the mother anymore.
Actually,
meaning that they have wings already. They have feathers and they can already fly. So because they don't need the mother, they're not like eggs in that sense. And vice versa, if the eggs are unfertilized, then you don't need to do shalach hakan because they're not like chicks. They're not gonna continue in existence.
So you would need to throw away the mother when.
No. So you in these two cases you
no,
don't.
In these two cases. Which case?
So when the eggs are fertilized or the chicks are young and are not yet flying, then you have to do shalach hakan. But if the eggs are unfertilized or the chicks are already flying, then you don't.
If you have one that's flying.
Then whichever one isn't flying, obviously you have to send the other shalach hakan and account one.
You have to check them before.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Okay. Turn it up on them. Revetes v'loima ifetes. When the pasuk says that the mother is resting, brooding, whatever, revetes literally means crouching, on the young, that implies v'loima ifetes. That means that she's not flying above the nest. Yachal afilu knefer nevis pakan. You would think then that applies even if the wings are touching the nest. No, tamabayma revetes. After all, though, the pasuk does say revetes, meaning crouching. The ends of the wings, she's flying above the nest, but the ends of the wings are touching the nest.
That's also called revetes?
Yeah. So the question is, my Talmud, where do you get, how do you see that that's called revetes? The answer is, yeshevet. Because the Pasuk doesn't use the word yeshevet, which literally means sitting with its full weight. The word revetes implies that anything as long as it's sort of crouching, yeah, then that's, so when it has its wings touching the nest, it can still be considered as crouching over the nest. Okay. Fine. Amar of Yehuda Amarav. Suppose that the bird is sitting between two branches of a tree. So you have these branches up above, the mother bird is sitting on those branches, the nest is somewhere below on a lower branch. So the mother is not actually touching the nest, but royim, we have to consider the situation. If she's directly above the nest, such that if you were to push the branches apart, then she would fall directly onto the nest. Then you're chayev in shalach hakan, because the fact that there's air between them doesn't mean anything. She is, after all, sitting. Unlike, and the thing, the verb is, we said yeshevet, revetes means v'loy me'efetes. Here she's not flying. She is sitting. She is in a sitting or crouching position on the branches. And the fact that there's air between her and the nest is not a chassidah. Air is not a chassidah. No, so before we talk about the question if there's a cloth, if there's other eggs, et cetera, but here all there is air, so that wouldn't be chassidah. So as long as she is directly above the nest, such that if you move the branches, she would fold them to the nest, then you chayev in shalach hakan, v'imlav potter, and it is, because she is revetes on the branch, directly above the nest.
How is she protecting them at that point? She's far.
Okay, but still close enough. I mean, the branches are not that far from the nest, and therefore, okay, you could still say she's protecting them from predators or whatever. I don't know.
So it has to be really, the branches have to touch the nest?
Maybe, not necessarily. Maybe. There is one way of looking at it that says that, yeah, maybe you consider the branches are like an extension of the nest upward. So maybe, in that case, you would say they have to be touching the nest, but the Gemara itself doesn't seem to be making that distinction. But yeah, apparently the idea is, as long as she's directly above them and actually sitting rather than flying, then you chayev in shalach hakan, as long as she's directly above them. The imra potter, and if not, if she's not directly above them, then you potter. Okay. The Gemara says meisi, but I have a contradiction. A braisa says hoyse yeshevet beinehen. If the mother is sitting between the eggs, so instead of brooding on them as she normally does to warm them with her body, instead she's sitting like with one egg on one side and one egg on the other side, potter mil shalayach. Then you potter for shalach hakan, but al gabehen chayev l'shalayach. But if she's above them, then you chayev to be m'shalayach. Now, al gabehen presumably doesn't just mean we're talking about that she's actually sitting on them in the regular way, because then there's no chiddush. The b'raita doesn't have to tell that. We know that from the pasuk. So that's why you have to figure out what the b'raita means by al gabehen. And the b'raita continues, if she's flying above the nest, afilu knefer nogas bakan, even if her wings are touching the nest, potim l'shalayach, and you potim l'shalayach hakan, which of course we're going to ask soon that contradicts the Mishnah. But the point is, my lab al gabehen dumya debenehen. shouldn't we assume that the case where the mother is sitting al gabehen, on top of them, is dumya debenehen, is in a certain way similar to sitting next to them, because the braisa is mentioning, the braisa is contrasting them, that if she's between them, you potter, if she's above them, then you chayev, implying that there's a certain similarity between them, but nevertheless, one is potter and one is chayev. So what would be the similarity? When she's sitting between them, she's not touching directly above them. She may be touching them from the side, but that doesn't matter. She's not actually touching them from above. So when she's sitting between them, she's not touching them from the top. Therefore, you falter. Presumably, the al-gabehen is also talking about where she's touching them, but where at least she's somehow touching them. She's touching them from the side or whatever. But the implication would seem to be at least she has to somehow be touching them, as opposed to if she's sitting on a couple of branches above it. So if we understand the braisa that way, then it would contradict what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. It would mean that if she's sitting on branches and not at all touching the neck, you would be touching. The answer is loy. No, that's not the way to. That's not the correct inference. It's the other way around. Al gabehen dumya debenehen. Just the other way around. The al gabehen, where the braisa is saying yuchayev, has to be in a certain way similar to benehen, between them. Ma benehen deloy noga alayhu. When she's benehen, again, she's not touching them from above. She may be touching them just from the side. The same way when she's sitting above them, then she's not touching above them. She's not touching above them behind her robe, in which case that is the case of branches. Then the braisa would be supporting what Rabbi Yehuda is saying.
No.
Again, first we thought to say, I think I read the wrong lines over here, actually. We started by saying, my love, al gabein dumya debenein, ma benein de nogabuhu, af al gabein de nogabuhu. We assumed that when the Mishnah mentions al-gabehen, above them, and it mentions benehen, between them, we would assume that benehen means she's touching them. We didn't yet get into the point where she's touching them. We're just saying that because she is touching them, because if she wasn't touching them, and if she's not touching them at all, then there's no chiddush, right? So therefore, so al-gabehen would also have to be that at least she's touching them, implying that if she's on branches, you caught her. And the answer is no, it's the other way around. Al-gabehen will compare into benehen. Benehen, she is touching them, but not from above. She's touching them from the side. Therefore, al-gabehen also means we have to be talking about a case which is not touching them at all, which is not touching them from the top, because touching them from the top is significant. We don't care about touching them from the side. And what's a case where she's above them but not touching them? That would be a case where she's on branches. So therefore, so we thought the braisa would contradict Rabbi Yehuda, and now we're saying just the opposite. It seems to support him.
One second. If you take it from the eggs are surrounding the mother, but they still have to touch her, or she has to touch them.
What we're saying is in the Mishnah, in the Braisa, I mean, that if she is between the eggs, then you potter. Now, the Gemara assumed that there would be no chiddush if she wasn't touching them at all. Then obviously you potter. So the chiddush is if she's touching them and nevertheless you potter. Therefore, the implication is al gabehen would also have to be where she's touching them. And in that case, it would mean she has to be touching them regardless. So if she's sitting on branches above them, then it doesn't help.
Right.
And the answer is no. When she's sitting between them, the key thing is that she's not touching them from above. She's touching them from the side. So in other words, forget about the fact that she's touching them from the side, the fact that she's sitting here and the egg is next to her, doesn't matter. It would have to be that she's touching them from above. And therefore, as long as she's not touching them from above, it's as if she's not touching them at all. However, if she was above them and not touching them, then you'd be higher. Well, that's exactly the case Rabbi Yehuda is talking about when she's sitting on branches above the nest.
So the two cases are not, we cannot do it.
No, so that's the thing. So the two cases have a certain similarity. In both cases, she's not touching the top of the eggs. But in one case, she's potter because she's sitting between them. And in the other case, you're chayev because she's sitting above them. And if you were to move the branches, she'd fall onto them. Okay. Yeah. In fact, the Gemara said, yeah. In fact, it's logical to understand the braisa that way, that we are talking about that the bird, that the mother is sitting on branches. Because if you were going to think that, in fact, you're potter from Shaloh HaKan, if she's sitting on branches above the nest, well then, adatoni hoitamotefes, so then why would the braisa have to mention a whole different case where she was flying, and we said, where even if her wings are touching the neck, that you'd be potter from Shaloh HaKan, instead, let the braisa tell us the greater chiddush, that even if she's on branches directly above the neck, you're still potter because you're not touching. And how much more so if she's flying or she's not even crouching there at all? So the fact that the braisa doesn't do that implies that it is supporting what Rabbi Yehuda is telling us, what Rav is telling us, that only if she's flying is she, are you potter, only if she's flying and not touching the nest are you potter, but if she's resting on the branches, resting on the branches directly above the nest, even though she's not touching the nest, you would be fine.
And that's derived from the analogy of the eggs.
Well, so first
her.
We thought to first we're saying to derive it from the analogy of the eggs around her, but now we're saying also it's because otherwise the Braisa could have mentioned just the case where she's sitting on branches and say that you're potter then, and automatically from then we would know that if she's flying, how much more so. Well, that's the point. The Braisa tells us where she's flying, you're potter, implying, but if she's crouching, if she's sitting on branches, then you're higher. Well, that's what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav is telling us. Fine. On the other hand, the Gemara says
the two analogies are not exactly the same, because when she's sitting between them, she's still touching them.
That's the point. What we're saying is only touching them from the top is significant.
Right.
Any other touching doesn't matter.
Right.
So originally in the question we thought that it matters. Now we're saying it doesn't matter. If she's just touching them from the side, it's as if she's not touching them at all. So in the case where she's sitting between them, you potter. On the other hand, a parallel case where she's sitting above them and not touching them, you'd be chayev. And what would that be when they're on branches? And that's also shown from the fact that the Braisa only mentions the more obvious case when it's flying, rather than mentioning the less obvious case when it's sitting on branches. Okay. On the other hand, the Gemara says that's not really a proof, because you could say the Braisa had to tell us the case where the bird is flying. You can't say that it should have mentioned the case of roosting on a branch, and we would derive from that how much more so when it's flying, because it's just the opposite. We need it's a chiddush when it's flying. That even if the wings are touching the nest, potter from the shalayach, that you're potter from sending, you're potter from shaluach hakan. That we wouldn't know. If the Mishnah had, if the Braisa, I mean, had mentioned the case where the bird is resting on a branch above the nest, and suppose the Braisa had told us you're potter, then you would say, okay, you know why you're potter? Because it's not even touching the nest. But if she's flying, but her wings are touching, you would think maybe you should be flying. So therefore, you could argue that Braisa had good reason to mention the case of flying in order to highlight that point. So not necessarily is the Braisa taking a position on the question of if it's sitting above it on the branches. Okay.
And that's because now we see that Braisa
had to mention flying, right. Right. Okay. Okay. So now that we just now that we
so
now
that,
yeah.
So where do we stand?
Well, so far we don't have a proof one way or the other. So we could say the Braisa is supporting Rabbi Yehuda. Fine. At least we can say it's not a question on him, but it's not necessarily a proof for him either. Okay. So the question is anyway, why is the Braisa saying that if the bird is flying, you're and even if the wings are touching the neck, the Mishnah had said that if the wings of the mother are touching while flying above the nest, then you are chayev l'shalayach. Yeah, but what the Braisa means when the Braisa says that even if the wings are touching, then you potter, we mean where the wings are touching the sides of the nest, not the top of the nest. So in other words, so far we would have the following distinction. We would say if the mother bird is flying above the nest, if the tips of the wings are touching the inside of the nest, then you're chayev. If not, then you're potter. Even if it's touching the sides of the nest or not touching at all, then you'd be potter. If it's sitting among the eggs, then we're saying you're potter, meaning not on them, but among them. Even if the wings are touching the eggs, as long as they're not on top of them. And if the mother is on branches directly above the nest, that we don't know from the Braisa yet, but that's what Rabbi Yehuda is telling us in the name of Rav, that you'd be chayev as long as it's directly above the nest. All of that is one version of the discussion. Ikadamri, the other version of the discussion, goes the other way around. They started by bringing this Braisa as a possible proof for Rabbi Yehuda's statement. We only had one Braisa here. So in the second version, we're going to try to bring that, what we brought before, the question against Rabbi Yehuda, we're going to try to bring as a proof for him. So Ikadami, Lema Messiah, should we say that this Braisa supports Rabbi Yehuda's statement, if the mother is sitting between the eggs, then potum l'shalayach, then you potum l'shalayach, al gabeyan chayav l'shalayach, but if it's above them, then you chayav, That's an if the bird is flying, even if its wings are touching the nest, so, according to this version, we start with the assumption, my love, Agabeyan, Dumya Debenehan. Shouldn't we assume that the bird being above the nest is similar in a certain way to being between the eggs? Ma benehan de la nogalayu, when the mother is sitting between the eggs, she's not touching the tops of them. So the parallel case where she's sitting al-gabehen would be that she's not touching the tops of them. Namely, that would be the case where it's sitting on branches, and therefore that literally means rows. So over here it means like rows of branches or whatever, like parallel branches above the nest. So then in that case, that would support what Rabbi Yehuda is telling us. And the answer is not necessarily loy al-gabehen dumya debenehen. Could be the comparison is the other way around. The bird being above the nest is in a certain way similar to being between them. Ma benehen de nogabuhu, just like when it's sitting between the eggs, necessarily it's touching them, because again, if it wasn't touching them, then there's no chiddush that you're potter. Af al-gabehen de nogabuhu, maybe when we say that the bird is above them, it also has to be that it's touching them somehow. And Abba Rav de Ilan Potter, but if it's sitting on branches and not even touching the nest, you could argue that it's Potter against Rabbi Yehuda. So then the question is, Ihochi, again, like we said before, if so, if you're going to tell me that, in fact, if it's on branches, you're Potter, Adi Katani Sefer, then why does the Braisa continue in the Sefer Hosamai Sefer, that if the bird is flying, I feel a fair notice for Cain Potter, even if the wings are touching the nest is Potter, listen, Rav de Ilan, Let the Braisa mention the case where the mother is on branches above the nest. The Choshekin Ma'ifesus, and then we would understand the Kavachomer from that when she's flying. Which is also separate from the nest. And the answer is no. The other way around, Ma'ifesus is Tzrichalei. No, because you could argue that the Braisa had good reason to mention the case where she's flying. Afilu Knefer Nogis Bakein, because there with the Chiddush is, even though the wings are touching the nest, Potim L'Shalach.
When she's flying,
even if the wings are touching the nest, you potter. So there is a chiddush in that over where she's sitting on branches above the nest. We're there. If she's sitting on branches and the ends of her wings touch the nest, then of course you'd be higher. Okay.
The difference between flying and sitting on the branches.
Because the difference is that flying is not even included in revetus.
Right.
So if the pasuk is saying revetus implies she has to be sitting somehow. So if she's sitting on branches, okay, at least she's sitting, and if her wings reach the nest, then fine, then you have both. She's revetus and she's ala frozen. Okay, so then again, we have the question that the Braisa seems to contradict the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said that if the wings are touching the nest, then you chayev and shaloh akan. So how is the Braisa saying that if the wings are touching, that even if the wings are touching the nest, you potter? And the answer is, Amar Rav Yehuda, or Rav Yirmi, as I said before, yes, but the Mishnah is talking about a case where the wings are only touching the sides of the nest, not the top of the nest. If it's touching the top, then you have the rule of our Mishnah that you'd be chayav, and if it's touching the sides of the nest when it's flying, then you'd have the rule of the Braisa that you follow.
The nest is like a square?
Yeah, let's say the nest is like a bowl or something. Yeah, it's touching the sides, yeah, like the outside sides.
Then, you would say,
then you'd say, then the bride says, telling us your potter.
Your potter.
Right.
As opposed to when it touches the bottom of the bowl.
As opposed to when it's touching the inside or whatever, yeah. Then you'd be higher.
The
Pasuk
doesn't say that.
Well, the Pasuk says, well, in Rivet, it's basin. She's on the eggs or on the chicks. So in this case, if she's flying, so it's not revetus, and the wings are not actually touching ala frozen by ala beitim, then you're potter. So the braisa is not necessarily a proof or a contradiction to Rabbi Yehuda, but the halacha nevertheless is like him. That if the mother bird is sitting on branches above the nest, then as long as she's sitting directly above the nest, you'd be chayav in shaloh akan, even if she's not touching. Right.
Everybody agrees on
that. Everybody is, yeah, that's halacha. Okay. Then the Mishnah had said, Ein sham ela afroyach, even if there's only one chick or one egg in the nest, then you chayav in shaloh akan. But we said that if the... Because even though it says a froichim beitim, it means you chayev even if only one. On the other hand, the Mishnah continued that if the chicks are already flying or the eggs are unfertilized, then you potter.
The froichim is plural.
That's what we have to figure out. So, in other words, basically what you have to figure is you have sort of a ribui and a miut over here. You have a ribui from the fact, from the word kain, it means whatever can, whatever. It means whatever is in the nest, you chayev. On the other hand, you have the comparison, the hekish that the Mishnah pointed out between the efroichim and the beitim, that efroichim are able to live and therefore the beitim also have to be viable, so they can't be unfertilized. And vice versa, that the eggs need their mother and therefore the chicks have to be young enough to need their mother as well. So that's sort of a miut. So, so one of the Chachamim asks the other, Eima Ipcha. Maybe say that actually the Ribui and the Miut are the other way around. If you only have one chick or one egg in there, Potim L'Shalayach, you're in an Afroichim Ebeitim B'Lecha. Because then you would say, the fact is, the Pasuk says you need chicks in the plural or eggs in the plural, and you don't have. But you should argue the other way around. Now, even if the chicks are already fledgling and already flying, or the eggs are unfertilized, argue that you should still have to do shalach kan, because after all, the word kan should include whatever is in the nest. Why are you saying that the word kan is meant to include the case where there's only one egg or one chick, and then a froichim or beitim is meant to exclude the case where the birds are able, where the chicks are able to fly or the eggs are unfertilized, say the other way around? That a froichim or beitim means you have to have at least two, and kan means no matter what kind of birds or whatever kind of chicks or whatever kind of eggs are in the nest, whether they're flying or not, whether they're fertilized or not, why don't we learn it that way?
Now we've been learning, saying what?
The Mishnah has said that even if you only have one egg or one chick, you chayev, however, the eggs have to be fertilized eggs, and the chicks have to be ones that aren't flying.
Yes,
so why?
Fertilized and not flying. I mean, not flying.
Right. So the question is, why don't we say that the ribui of kan includes even if the birds are flying or even if the eggs are unfertilized, and a frozen, a basim, instead of using it for a hekish that they have frozen, it has to be like a basim, or a minimum of two, right? The answer is, imkein nichtiv krova im revetis aleihem. The answer is, Rava says, yes, but if that's the case, then the Pasuk could have just said, like this, the Pasuk already mentioned that you have eggs or chicks in the nest. The Pasuk starts off, if you happen to find a nest in front of you, baderech on the road, b'cholei sa'alar, efroichim ay beitim, and there are chicks or eggs in the nest, and then the Mishnah continues, and then the Pasuk continues, v'aim revetes ala efroichim ay ala beitim. So like this, the Pasuk could have just said, v'aim revetes aleihem, the mother is brooding on them.
Doesn't have to repeat
the words efroichim ay beitim. My v'aim revetes ala efroichim ay ala beitim, that repetition of efroichim ay beitim must be like kushi efroichim ay beitim or beitim la efroichim. That must be to make the hekesh, as the Mishnah told us, that the beitim have to be like the efroichim in being viable, and the efroichim have to be like the beitim in needing the mother, and therefore automatically that means that is the miyot, that the chicks can't be fledgling and the eggs can't be unfertilized, and therefore of necessity, the word can, therefore, which is a ribui, must mean that it means no matter how many or how few there are in the nest, even if there's only one.
Why can we say that the efroichim might have to be like a beitim, but they still need two?
The efroichim need to be like a beitim, and the beitim need to be like the efroichim, because then once we're using it for that drasha, we don't also have it available to teach us that there are two. So and just the opposite, we have the word kan to tell us that it means whatever kind of nest. We know there's definitely a ribui of kan, and once we're saying that efroichim and beitim teaches us the efroichim are like the beitim, and the beitim are like the efroichim, then what are we being marveled from the word kan? It must mean even if there's only one egg or one chick.
Yeah, but then we could have said efroichim or beitim.
The Torah could have said efroichim or beitim, like this it didn't, because normally a nest has more than one chick and more than one egg in it. So it's fine. Possibly I mentioned the ferocious and abasim, because that's the normal way of things that you have. Because it's the normal way of things, because most nests have more than one egg or more than one chick in them. But it's not meant to be mammite, but there's only one, because that you have some wood can really that includes them. Okay.
So it's a mute and it's a...
So it's sort of like a mute and a ribble. Yeah. Okay. All right. Mishnah says, if you sent away the mother bird and then it returned before you had a chance to take the eggs or the chicks, even if this happens 4 or 5 times, you're still chayav to send away the mother. She has to be away. She has to be away before you can take them. Yeah, it's cool. First of all, we learned
that she wants to come back.
She wants to come back. Fine. So, okay. A again, according to the Chavos Yair, as we talked about at the beginning of the parak, once you find the nest, you have an obligation to do a mitzvah of Shiloh HaKam. So that means you send away the mother bird as many times as necessary. If she returns, before you have a chance to take the egg, because you didn't pick up the eggs yet. That's what we're going to contrast that with the case where you picked up the eggs anyway.
You have a mitzvah to
want
the eggs, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. So that's what we talked about at the beginning of the parak. You weren't here. You have the Chavos Yair and the Chacham Tzvi talk about that the mitzvah is once you find the nest, you're automatically chayav in Shiloh HaKam, whether you want the eggs or chicks or not. According to many other achronim, including the Chacham Sofer and others, no, it's only if you want the eggs or the chicks, then you have to do Shiloh HaKam. But in this case, no. So in this case, all it means is, so you wanted the eggs or the chicks, let's say, so you're chayiv, so you have to do whatever. Either way, you're chayiv in the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKam, under whatever circumstances. You sent away the mother. Before you had a chance to take the eggs or the chicks, she came back. So you have to send her away again and do that as many times as necessary until she's away when you take the eggs or the chicks.
That's if you want the eggs.
So well, again, according to the Chavos Yair, you wouldn't even necessarily need to take the eggs, but whatever. Yeah. We talked about at the beginning of the parak what the Zohar talks about, but in a sense, you are doing it, it's a cruel thing, and the mother feels very bad, and therefore evokes mercy for the Jewish people, and then Shemayim, for the name. Okay. Because the mother represents the Shechina, and when she's separated from her children, and she cries out in pain about it to Hashem, so like it evokes Hashem's mercy on the Jewish people.
That's true, but that's
for a greater purpose. All right, let's go on anyway. Shinema shalayach
The bird, Hashem should understand it.
Okay. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, then you should send away the mother bird. So we'll see in the Gemara why that doesn't mean only two times. Okay.
Why would
Shalach to Shalach? We're going to get to in the Gemara. Yeah, we're going to get to that in the Gemara. Suppose the person says, I want to do the opposite. I want the mother bird. I'm willing to send away the children. No. Chayav, he's still chayav to send away the mother. He can't make his own rules. Shenema, shalayach to shalach at the end. The apostle says, you have to send away the mother. Okay. If he decided, if he said, I want to keep the mother and I want to send away the children, that doesn't work. He has to.
I want to keep the mother.
And I want to send away the children, which is the opposite of what the apostle says. So you can't do that. On the other hand, okay, what happens if he took the children, he actually picked them up, and thereby he was cutting to them, then he put them back into the nest, and then the mother came back to these eggs or these chicks, then because now it's mizuman. Now it's a nest that's pre-prepared for you, and we learned at the beginning of the parak that you're potter in that case.
You want to come back when someone...
That may be why the halacha is that you're not chayav, because it's not a common thing. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Amalei ahumin abanon the rabba. So one of the chachamim asks Rabba, why should we assume that shalayach to shalach at the aim means you have to send her away as many times as necessary? Maybe it only means shalach, the aim of shalach kodazim. Maybe the word shalach means shalayach actually means you have to send one time to shalach trezim. And the word to shalach means a second time. But after that, if it keeps on returning, then you're positive. Amalei, so Rabba tells him no. Shalayach is an infinitive. Therefore, I feel a may upon him. The word shalayach is an infinitive, so it means no matter how many times. The word shalayach in and of itself means as many times as necessary. Yeah, Yaakov, you're mentioning Gemara and Bava Metzia, that mentions a similar thing with other mitzvahs as well. Nosen titein, and poshoyach tifach, and a number of other things. Yeah, each one, each time, the first word is an infinitive, and therefore it means as many times as necessary. Yeah, okay.
After two times,
yeah, you could take the whole thing. So shalayach to me'apam to shalach. So what does the word to shalach teach us? It's something else. Ein li elul advar harishos. If you only have the word shalayach, yes, you would know you have to send it away as many times as necessary. But you would not know that you have to do the mitzvah of shiloach hakan, even if you need the mother for a mitzvah. The divine mitzvah minayin. How do we know it also applies for divine mitzvah? And Rashi gives two examples. One of them is, let's say, you need the bird for the korban of a yeledet. The other one is, let's say, you need the birds for the tahara of Amtsara, as we've learned before. So that's why you have the tshalach. Some of them, the tshalach mikol makom. Regardless,
to the draft it is a little more straightforward. It says tshalach and li ela ledavar arushus, which is tshalach, and then shalach and li ela ledavar arushus.
No, shalayach means just the fact that you have to do it even 100 times. No, shalayach means you have to do it even 100 times. with the word, what is the word Tishalach coming to teach us? Because without the word Tishalach, in the Elul Advar HaRashus, you would only know that you have the mitzvah of Shaluach HaKan if you're taking the bird, if you're taking the eggs or the chicks for a Advar HaRashus, for an optional purpose, Ledvar Mitzvah Minayin. How do we know that it also applies if you try to take them for a Advar Mitzvah? For example, for the korban of a Yoledes, or for the purification of Mitzvah, Talmud Lomar Tishalach, Mekom Mokom, therefore the pasuk is Tishalach, regardless, you always have the mitzvah of Shaluach HaKan.
Is 100 times.
And Tishalach means even for Dvar Mitzvah.
For
Dvar Mitzvah, you still have it. Omelet of Abba Brezer of Yosef Barovel or Akahana. Ella, so what are you telling me? Taima de Kosa Rahman Tishalach. So you're telling me only because the pasuk adds the extra word Tishalach, therefore you can't take the bird, therefore you can't be over on Shaluach HaKan, even when you need the birds for a mitzvah. So what? And if it weren't for the word Tishalach, you would think that then you would think that if you needed the birds for a Dvar Mitzvah, then you don't have to do Shaluach HaKan. How could that be? Esther v'loy sesehu. Shaluach HaKan involves an Esther and a loy sesehu, because you have an Esther shaloyach Tishalach HaSeim. You have a loy sesehu, loy sikach ha'im alabonim. They now have to take the mother together with, or when she's with the children. So automatically, we know that an Esther doesn't have a loy sesehu Esther. We know as a general rule that an Esther is not doesn't have a loy sesehu Esther. So fine, you have an Esther to bring korbanos for a mitzvah. You have an Esther to bring korbanos for your yoledes. You have an Esther to do the purification of a mitzvah, but that's only an Esther. An Esther can't cancel out a loy sesehu and an Esther. So why would we think that you could, such that we need the word Tishalach to tell us that you can't?
An
Esther cannot be judged for a loisus and a loisus. Yeah, Shaluach HaKan is an Esther and loisus. So automatically we know that the mitzvah of Taras Mitzorah or the korban of a Yoledes or whatever is to not take the mother. Yeah, loisik achayim alabonim. So therefore, automatically it's not judged. So why would we need the word Tishalach? The answer is loisrika. Yeah, but the reason why that we need the word Tishalach is, suppose you have the case, the over of a shokla la'im, suppose that the guy was over on the loisetzeh, and he took the mother. So now at that point, you were already over on the lav. So therefore, really, all you have is one esther versus another esther. You have the esther of being matahar the matzora. On the other hand, you have the esther that you have to send away this bird. So you would think, maybe therefore, one esther can be doicha another esther. The lois tzricha, the over b'shokolayim, the lav avre. So the lav he's already been over on. So the lav he's already been over on. It's too late to talk about because he took the mother. So therefore, Esther who di'ikka. So now all you have left is an Esther. You would think lazy Esther v'lizche Esther. You would think that one Esther therefore should cancel out another Esther. Therefore, the Esther of using the Esther of purifying the Masoda should cancel out the Esther of shaleach tishalach ha'sehim. Kamash malon, and that is why the pasuk needs to have the word tishalach to tell us that that's not the case. Okay. Now the problem with that is hanichal mandatoni. Now you have like this. We know that we're going to discuss in connection with the next Mishnah that, well, according to the Chachamim, anyway, we'll talk about Rabbi Yehuda versus the Chachamim, but according to the Chachamim, at any rate, Shaluach HaKan is an example of a lav hanitzak la'esther. You have a lav, don't take the mother with the children, and if you did, shaleach tishalach ha'sa'im, then you have a mitzvah to send away the mother. Now, you have a sugya in Makos that discusses the code based on a brisa over there that's talking about lav hanitzak la'esther, when a person does and doesn't get malchus for the lav. So there's two different ways, there's two different versions in the Gemara of how the brisa goes. They're called kimoi v'loi kimoi versus bitloi v'loi bitloi. Namely like this. You can have, so you were over on a certain loisa, so you were over on a lav hanitzak la'esther. Now, what's the deal? Do we say that a person is high of malchus, so is he high of malchus, if he doesn't do the esther, the toch kedei digur, Rashi says over here, or in Makos, Rashi says, when based and tells him to do the esther, he doesn't do it, then he's chayav of Malkus, even though he could yet conceivably do the esther later, because he didn't do it, toch kedei digur, he didn't tell it when based and told him to, then therefore he's chayav. Right. Darais, we're talking about Malkus, we're talking Darais.
No, but the Rabbana said a delay.
Again, if we say kimoi v'loi kimoi, it would mean, kimoi v'loi kimoi, in our case, would mean like this. If he took the mother bird, then he has a certain amount of time by which to send it away, or he's facing malchus. what that time is. Rashi in Or Gemara over here says that it's B'tosh Kedei Dibur. Rashi in Makos says that's when Beis Din tells him to do the Esser. Anyway, if he doesn't do it at that point, he's Chayav Malkus. He still could conceivably send away the mother bird later because she's still alive. Well, doesn't matter. He's Chayav Malkus. That's Kimoi V'loi Kimoi. Bifloi V'loi Bifloi would mean when you Chayav Malkus for such a lab, only if you actually did something to be mevatel the possibility of doing the Esser. In our case over here, it would mean, let's say he took the mother, and then let's say he shechted her. So now it's impossible to ever do the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan again, because she's dead. Then the person would get Malkus. But according to that way of looking at it, bitloy v'loy bitloy, if he didn't do anything to prevent it, then he still had it. It's open-ended. As long as at some future time, he could do the Esther, then he would be possible from Malkus.
Very unlikely after the time that he would do it.
That doesn't matter. The point is he has the option. In our case over here, Hanicha Lamanda Omar, so far this discussion, what did we say? We're talking about that suppose the person was over on the loisese. He took the mother even though he wasn't supposed to. Now we're saying the loisese is gone, all that's left is the esser. And the question is, therefore, you would think that the esser of being Matahar and Masorah cancels out the esser of Shaleach the Shalach, and therefore the Pasuk is telling you that. So the question is, Hanicha Lamanda Tani Kimoi V'loi Kimoi, that works out well according to the Kimoi V'loi Kimoi opinion. Meaning, in other words, that's exactly that. So he took the mother bird. B'tosh Kedei Dibur has passed already. He didn't do Shiluach HaKan. Therefore, he's Chayav Malkus. So at that point, there's no talking about is he going to be over the loisese or whatever. It's already a done deal. He was over the loisese. There's no taking that back. Now the only question is, can he still do the mitzvah saseh of Shiluach HaKan? But on the other hand, there's also a mitzvah saseh facing him of being Matahar or Masorah. And the question is, should one override the other?
To put it simply, for one opinion, you get Malkus when you fail to do one mitzvah, and for the second opinion, when you fail to do both mitzvahs. Kimo v'lo kimo
means as soon as you were over on the loisese, within a certain amount of time after you were over on the loisese and didn't do the corresponding mitzvah, as I say, then you have Malkus, right? Bitlo means only if you made it impossible to do the asset.
Okay.
Well, it doesn't matter, really. Yeah, I mean, bitlo actually, I think you have a little more discussion. Yeah, the bird died, let's say, would be another example. Yeah. Okay, anyway. So, Elamanda Tony, Bitloy Vele Bitloy, but according to the version of the Bryce over there, that the key thing is Bitloy Vele Bitloy, that only if it was Mevato the Esther, only if he did something to make it impossible to ever do the mitzvah Saseh, for example, killing the bird. Well, why would we say that? The Loisester has already been accomplished. Kama Bele Shokta Le Avri Lalav. As long as he didn't yet shech the bird, he wasn't yet over on the lab, because whether he was over on the lab is still up in the air, depending what happens later.
Literally true.
Okay. So according to that way of looking at it, then why would you need the word shalach? Obviously, you have an esser and a loisesser still involved over here, according to the way of looking at it, a bitloy. The two, and not only that, little Yehuda, the Amos Shaleach Meikra Mashma, what about, this is all according to the Chachamim, what about according to Yehuda in the next Mishnah, who says that if you were over on the mitzvah, then Rav Yehuda learns that Shaleach HaShalach HaTaim is something you have to do to begin with. He holds basically, as we're going to see in the next piece of Gemara, that it's not necessarily a lav mitzvah esther. One way of looking at it is Rav Yehuda might say, you have a mitzvah to begin with to send away the mother. If you were over on that and you took the mother, too late. No, too late. And then you can't do the mitzvah. The mitzvah Shaleach HaShalach is gone. Forget about the Masorah a second. According to Rabbi Yehuda, in general, if you take the mother, immediately forget about Bithloi V'loi Bithloi Kimoi V'loi Kimoi, as soon as there's no effort to do to make up for it. So therefore, in other words, according to him, Shalayach means to begin with. When you find the nest, the first thing you have to do is send away the mother bird. If you took the mother bird instead, that's it. You're too late to do Shalayach. Right. But come disagree. We'll see in the next mission. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says Shaleach Meikra Mashma, the word Shaleach means to begin with, you have to send it away, but not afterwards. Well then, Afila Esther Nami Lesser. Then according to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't even have an Esther involved over here, because by the time you took the mother bird, the Lois Esther is gone, the Esther is also gone. So according to him, well, you're Chayav Malkus according to him. But the point is, then again, why do we need the word to then why do we need the word to Shaleach? As a matter of fact, according to Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, actually, if you need it for a Dvar Mitzvah, then you might be able to take it, because at that point, if you already took it illegally, then yeah. Yeah, exactly. So even for a Dvar Harashur, Rashi says, once you took it already, then it doesn't need Shiluach, because you're already over on the lab and the asset. So So therefore, so again, you're saying that you need the word tashalach to say, even though you would think that you have only an esteh versus an esteh over here, but in this case, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't even have an esteh. So what's the word tashalach doing? What's the word tashalach doing for us? Ela oma ma'abravashi. So we reject that explanation. So oma ma'abravashi. So ela oma ma'abravashi. Tosfos, by the way, brings up an interesting point over here. When we talk about the idea of an esse not being doicha, that an esse is not doicha a loisa seva esse, Tosfos brings an opinion from the Riva, one of the Balei Tosfos, who learns. Now we know that an esse is doicha a loisa. So the Riva learns that actually when you have an esse versus a loisa seva esse, what actually happens is the esse does cancel out the lav.
The
Riva is learning that when you have an esse versus a loisa seva esse, what happens is the esse on the one side does cancel out the lav on the other side. The only problem is you're still left with an esse, which hasn't been canceled out. So Tosfos says the Gemara doesn't seem to fit with that shitta, because we're saying over here that as long as you didn't take the bird, you have an esse and a loisa. Whereas according to the Riva, you should say that even before you took it, you really only have an esse to deal with, because you have the esse of Taras Masorda came and canceled it out. So in fact, Tosfos says that Tosfos' answer is that okay, maybe the Riva would say that all it means is when you say esse is not doicha loisa seva esse, it would mean therefore that if you were over on it, let's say you did take the bird and use it for taras mitzvah, fine, you wouldn't get malchus, because in that case you would say the lav was cancelled out by the opposite esse, but not that it should be mutter to do it. In other words, the Rambam actually also argues with the Riva, because the Rambam writes that if you take the bird even for the purpose of taras mitzvah, then you chayav malchus, which means he disagrees with the Riva's premise. He would say that esse is not doicha loisa seva esse, means the lav is still fully in force. The esse has not canceled it out, as the Riva would say. The lav is still fully in force, and therefore you're going to be chayav malchus. Well, loisa seva chayav alabonim, therefore you're going to be chayav malchus. Okay, fine. Getting back to the Gemara. Ela omar mabra. Yeah, well, that's how the Rambam has been. Yeah. Okay. Ela omar mabra, actually. Prevention not la omanasta shaleah. Fine. Let's say we're talking about a slightly different case. Let's say he took the mother bird intending to send her away. So, okay, he wasn't yet over on the lab. Even Rabbi Yehuda would say he still has the mitzvah of shalayach to shalach ha'sein, because he didn't pick it up intending to keep it, which would be a violation of the lab. He picked it up intending to send it away, and we'll see on Amud Beis. It may even be that you're supposed to pick up and send it away. So, therefore, the intent makes a difference, sure. Because that's the point. If he's taking it intending to be over on loisik afayim alabanim, then he was over on the lab. If he's taking it as a prerequisite for doing the mitzvah, we're going to learn on Amud Beis. Oches v'chnafeo mafriach. One explanation of it means that you grab it by the wings and send it off, and that I'm in fact passing that way, that you hold the mother by the wings and then let it go. So therefore, in other words, you have to pick it up as a prerequisite for the mitzvah.
No, you can come close to the next.
Okay, so we'll talk on Amud Beis, which we'll get to tomorrow, Beis Hashem, about the... Yeah. Okay, hold on. Hold that thought till tomorrow. But anyway, the point is that, let's say in our case, he picked up the bird intending to send it away, so he wasn't over on the loisa there. Again, the lav letter, so you don't have a lav at this point, because he picked it up intending to send it away, so therefore he wasn't over on the lav. And in fact, he picked it up the heter. So now you can't say if he were to change his mind and keep it, he's not really over on the lav, because the lav shame, it's a lav shame in Maisa at most, you know. But it's not really, because lois sikach ha'em al abonim. At this point, he already took it in his hand. So there's no lav to be over at this point. Esther hu dik. At this point, all you have left is an esther. Shaleach to shalach ha'em. The late the esther v'lidche esther. So you would think one esther should cancel out the other, and that's why the esther of Taras Masorda should cancel out the esther of Shalayach HaShalach, and that is why we need the word Shalach to tell us that no, you can't do that. You still have the mitzvah of sending it away. Okay, so the question So that works out. That would work even according to Rabbi Yehuda, because even according to Rabbi Yehuda, when do we say there's no esther anymore is if you picked it up intending to keep it.
Here you just
picked it up intending to send it away. So once you have it in your hand already, then there's no more lav of lo tzikach.
Yeah,
okay. Fine. The question still is though like this. Our premise is the whole premise of this discussion is that the esse of taras mitzvah should be stronger than the esse of shaleach to shalach ha'seim, and therefore it should cancel it out. So the question is why? My umed high esse my high esse. Why is one esse stronger than the other? That we should say that it should cancel out. Uma means stronger. Yeah. What's the strategy? Yeah, that's the emotionality. The answer is Sakadaita, because you would think like this. Hoyov Omamar, because we know a Braita says, Godol Shalom Sheben Ishlish, the peace between husband and wife is a very great thing. Shari Omra Torah Shmo Shalakadosh Baruch Hu Chenichta B'Kedusha Yimocha Alamayim, because the Torah says the name of Hashem, which is written in Kedusha, should be erased in the water for the Sota to reconcile her with her husband. And behind Mitzvah, now Mitzvah, you have an issue of Shalom Bayis involved, because the Kivan Dekama Deloi Mitzahar, also the Tashmash HaMitzah, because until the Mitzvah becomes Tahar, he's also to have relations with his wife. And Rashi points out, there are actually, let's learn the Gemara, and then we'll talk about what Rashi says. Because the Pasuk says, V'yoshav mikutva ahol eshivat yamim, the Pasuk says, after the first stage, remember, the Tahar of Mitzvah has several stages. He has the first stage where once the Saras is healed and the Kohen does the whole thing with the two birds and the rest that's described at the beginning of the Parashat Mitzvah. After that, he has a lesser degree of Tumah. During that time, the process of Yoshav Mikotva Ol Yeshivas Yomim, he has to sit outside his tent for 7 days, and that means he can't be with his wife. After that, he shaves again, and the next day he brings his Korbanos, and that finishes up his Tahara. The pasuk is v'yoshav mechutz la'olay shivas yamim, and we know that olay zu ishto, the word olay there means his wife, mikan she'osu b'tashmash hamita, so we see from that that he's also to have relations with his wife, which therefore creates a certain distance between them. And now Rashi points out like this, during those 7 days between the thing with the birds and when he shaves and brings his korbanos, we know that he's also b'tashmash hamita, because we learn that from v'yoshav mechutz la'olay. The question is he also during the earlier period, what about when he actually has Tzaraas? When he's actually Tomei with Tzaraas, is he allowed to have relations with his wife? There are two opinions about it in the Masechet Moed Katan. One opinion is that during that time, when he's fine, he's excluded from the city and all, but if his wife wants to come out there and visit, then fine, they're allowed to have relations. So if we look at it that way, then doing the thing with the birds is not really so much causing Shalom Ben Ish Leishle, because they're allowed to have relations during that time anyway. But you have an opinion in Moed Katan that says that if he's also during the 7 clean days, how much more so he's also beforehand when he has a higher degree of Tumah. So according to that way of looking at it, a couple hundred, yeah. So according to that way of looking at it, then the thing with the birds is an important step in Shalom and Shalom Bayis, because it brings closer the time when they can have relations again. So therefore, you would think Maudatem, given to also the Tashmash HaMitah, since during that period he's also in Tashmash HaMitah, late the Esther D-Day, then the Esther of that, which is a very strong Esther, because it brings about Shalom Ben Ish Leish, you would think the Lidcha Esther of Shalom HaKan, it should be Doicha, the Esther of Shalom HaKan. So again, in the case that Marbet Avashi was talking about, so therefore, in other words, again, in the case that Marbet Avashi was talking about, where he picked up the mother bird intending to do Shalom HaKan, then we would say once he picked it up with that intention, then already there's no loisik ha'chaim alabanim to be over on. Now you would think all that's left is an essay shalayach tashalach ha'chaim. Versus that, you have an important essay which brings Shalom ben Ish Leish to be retired in the third. So you would think it would cancel it out. Kamash Malon, and that is why the word, that was why you have the word tashalach on the pasuk to tell us not like that.
Even though the mitzvah of Shalom Bayis
is a tremendously important thing, nevertheless, in this case, once you picked up the mother bird, you still have a mitzvah of sending it away.
And that's because...
Because it says the Shalom. Right.
So it's absolute.
So it's absolute.
It precedes the Shalom Bayis.
Right. And then, if you had picked it up to begin with, intending to keep it, then according to the Riva and Tosfos, you wouldn't be Chayav Malkus. According to the Rambam, you would. Yeah. Because even though, because still, you have an Esther versus a Lois that's an Esther. Okay. Yeah. Mishnah Bet. Hanoitel Eim al Abonim, if a person does take the mother with the chick, and by the way, you have a Machoikas Rishonim, you have Rashi on the Pasuk, learns Eim al Habonim means the mother is on the chick, meaning that the Issur is just to take the mother, even if you don't take the chicks, you just take the mother. You have other Rishonim will learn that you're only over on the Issur, you're only Chayav Malkus if you take them all, if you take the mother and the chick. In other words, the question is, does al mean on or does it mean with? Okay. Anyway, hanotel eim al abonim. So what if he is over? Well, al means on, but it can also mean with. Yeah, but it can also mean. Like they have when Yaakov, for example, in Parshas Vayishlach, when he says that I'm afraid the Esav is going to come and destroy eim al abonim. Yeah, he doesn't mean on the children, he means with them.
However,
what do we say? Eim habonim. We don't say al. Okay. Yeah. Hanotel eim al abonim. Let's talk about it later. Okay, Hanotel Eim al Abonim. So if a person does take the mother on or with the children, So he was over on the lotus book there. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Loika Ve'ena Meshaleach. Rabbi Yehuda says at that point he gets Malkus. He doesn't have the Efter anymore of sending it away because the Efter according to him is only at the beginning. V'chamem Meshaleach Ve'ena Loika. The Chacham says no, he has to send away the mother and he doesn't get Malkus. That while the rule is like this, kol mitzvah loisa says sheyesh b'kumase, any mitzvah that lois, any loisa says that is accompanied by a kumase, like in this case, where the Torah tells you, don't take the mother, but then it says send away the mother. So therefore it says...
The pasuk comes first with the love.
Well, that's, it doesn't matter the order in the pasuk, really. But as long as you have, as long as... So that's, well, that's the thing. I mean, we're going to see in the Gemara, actually, it doesn't matter the order of the stuff. But whatever, in this case, yeah, it is like that. First it says lois tikachayim, and then it says shalayach t'shalach ha'tayim. Yeah, so therefore, so the Chacham say, when you have a loisa there, which you also have involved in that say, ain't loisa allow that you don't get malchus for it, because instead of getting malchus, you're makayim the essay. Okay. So, Gemara says, boyer of Abba by Mamo. Time is Rabbi Yehuda. What is Rabbi Yehuda's reason why Rabbi Yehuda says that he gets malchus as soon as he took the Eimel Abba? Is it Mishum the Sover Lav Shinitik for Esa Loikin Olav? Is it that he disagrees with the rule that the Chachamim give in the second part of the Mishnah, which is the Chachamim are saying a Lav Anitik for Esa, you don't get Malkus for, and Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing and saying that you do? Oy Duma, the Alma Sover Lav Shinitik for Esa Ein Loikin Olav? Or maybe Rabbi Yehuda in general agrees with that rule, that a Lav Anitik for Esa, you don't get Malkus. Vahocha, Heiner Taima, but maybe...
Until
the, well, until Bitloy, well, Bitloy, Kimo, well, Kimo, right, but whatever. But Vahocha, Heiner Taima, but the reason why Rabbi Yehuda would say here, Yechayev Malkus, Mishim Bechastava, Shalayach Ne'ikra Mashma. Maybe over here, Rabbi Yehuda holds that Shalayach is something that only exists before you take the rules. Not more important. Ne'ikra Mashma means it only applies at the beginning. When you first find the net. The first thing you do is send away the mother, and Rabbi Yehuda would say, if you took the mother, then already it's too late to do Shalayach Hashala. The mitzvah already passed. So maybe they said, then it's not a Lava Nitzik Lasse. So Rabbi Yehuda would agree, in most cases of Lava Nitzik Lasse, let's say, for example, a person steals, he has a mitzvah to return it, a person leaves over from the carbon paper, he has a mitzvah to burn it, etc., then you're not Chayav Malkus. But over here, Rabbi Yehuda would hold, maybe, that Shalayach is something that you only it only applies before you took the mother. Once you took the mother, then the time for that mitzvah has passed. So it's not a lava nitzvah, right? It's a special case, but usually you say a lava nitzvah for your culture. So what is it? Toshma, ganav v'gazlan yeshnan v'chlal malchus divir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that a ganav or a gazlan are included in the category of malchus. In other words, if a person steals, they get malchus. Yeah. So, the ha-ha-ha delav shenitik lasehu. Now, when it comes to stealing, it's a classic lava nitik laseh. The rachmano amaloi figzo v'heshev et agdela, because the positive is don't steal, but then it says if you stole, you have to return what you stole. Shmamina taimed Rabbi Yehuda mishum b'chasav alav shenitik laseh loikin alav. Wouldn't that imply, therefore, that Rabbi Yehuda's reason must be that in general, he holds the lava nitik laseh yuchayim? Because if it was only the special case, if you break the law, as soon as you break the law, he would say immediately you're chayav malchus. You can make up for it with an essay. He says that doesn't matter. So therefore, so that would be the reason over here. Not because Shiloh HaKan is a special case, but it's because in general, he holds that the law and it's a class that you get malchus.
Yeah,
Allah is a chacham. But that if you, that's a law and it's a class that you get
malchus.
Well, because the law and it's a class that. In the case of Gneva and Zela, I don't know if there is a Bitloy, Hulay Bitloy. I mean, regardless, even if you destroyed the actual object, you still have a mitzvah of returning them. You still have a mitzvah of returning value of it. Okay. However, Reb Zera answers whoever brought this proof, maybe it was Reb Abba Bamamel, Lav Aminolahu, haven't I told you before, Kol Masnisib Leitanya Beira Priya Vera Moshia, any braisa that was not taught in the yeshiva of Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia, who made collections of braisas and were very precise to make sure that the wording is right and to accurately represent what each of the chachamim says, any such braisa that didn't come from them, mishabeshti, it may be a mistaken braisa. The loy tois for minabe medrasha, and you shouldn't be using it to ask questions in the base medrash. This braisa that you just quoted, any braisa that's not from the yeshiva, that was not taught in the yeshiva of Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia, is not necessarily so accurate. So don't use it to ask questions in the
general rule.
Yeah, that's the general rule. Because Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia were very precise to accurately reflect what each of the chachamim says in their wording, but not necessarily were other collectors of braisas so accurate.
And this
braisa, In other words, like this. We started, Rav Avraham Mamel started with a question. There's two possible ways of understanding Rav Yehuda's opinion in our Mishnah. One is that in general, he holds Lava Mythic Last of Yechayev Malchus. In that case, the same would apply to Ganav and Gazlan, even though it's a Lava Mythic Last. The other way of looking at it is that only in the case of Shiloh HaKan is an exception. Whoever composed this Braisa may have understood Rav Yehuda the first way, and really that's mistaken. Maybe Rav Yehuda held that it's only specific to Shiloh HaKan. So therefore, Dilma Einim B'chol Malchus Avoyim Tanya. Maybe the original version of this Braisa was actually that Rabbi Yehuda said that Ganav and Gazlan are not Chayav Malchus because it's a Lava Mythic Braisa. And then whoever later on came and reworded this Braisa mistakenly understood Rabbi Yehuda to be saying that in general Lava Mythic Braisa Yechayav. He understood Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah to be saying it's a general thing, not specific to Shiloh HaKan. So he reworded the Braisa to say that they do get Malchus Avoyim, but that would be wrong. That would be misunderstanding what Rabbi Yehuda said.
Fine, but how do we know it was not...
Because we know that this Braisa wasn't in the Yeshiva of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi
Shiya. That we know.
Yeah, that we know. So not necessarily... Okay, so not necessarily we can't rely on that Braisa to accurately represent Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Maybe he holds Lava Mythic Last Yechayev, but maybe not. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow, Rosh Hashanah.